Friends, one of the things I love about this congregation is the wonderful variety of faith stories that we bring together. Think of it, in this community, perhaps now even in this room, we identify as humanist, Christian, Buddhist, atheist, Jewish, Hindu, agnostic, lovers of nature, and more. In truth, depending on whether I've had my morning coffee yet, I may have trouble deciding which of any of these labels apply to me. Recently, one of my hospice patients told me, tongue firmly planted in cheek, "Thank God I'm an atheist." So maybe you've always been present to the religious variety that we have in this faith community, but it was not always so for me. I grew up in a particular faith community and family, similar to the way A. Powell Davies describes his childhood years in England. I grew up in rural northeastern Ohio, a few miles from the nearest village of Hartville. My family lived on quiet Hoover Avenue, which was unpaved in my childhood, in a farmhouse surrounded by hundreds of acres of corn or some years soybeans. As a kid, I was amazed by the religious variety in our neighborhood. We had a number of Amish families who lived on Hoover Avenue, but they were of two different kinds of Amish, you know, similar to Orthodox, Conservative, and Reformed Jews. Well, we had two different kinds of Old Order Amish on our street who shunned modern conveniences like electricity and who traveled by horse and buggy. These two groups had very clear guidelines about how to live, and they understood the differences, but no one else seemed to. Then there was the Beachy Amish family. Folks from the Beachy Amish church were permitted to drive cars, but only cars painted black. And remember when cars had chrome bumpers, they painted the bumpers black. This was to avoid the sin of pride that might accompany a bright colored car. Down the avenue was a family who attended a deeply traditional Mennonite church. They drove cars of any dark color, dark gray, dark blue, maybe even dark green. And there were also several conservative Mennonite families living on Hoover Avenue. One of them was mine. We drove cars of any color. Not that we were proud, of course. And right next to us lived dear old Mrs. Hall, who was a wonderful soul, but we all felt vaguely uneasy about her. Mrs. Hall was one of those liberal Mennonites that you couldn't really tell apart from a Presbyterian, Lutheran, or Catholic. Oh my. So count with me, on rural Hoover Avenue, there were three varieties of Amish and three varieties of Mennonites. I tell you, as a kid growing up in the 60s, I knew a thing or two about diversity. Yes, for better and for worse, many of us have interesting stories about our families of origin. Fortunately, we can also build families of choice. We gravitate towards friends who have similar interests or life experiences, and sometimes it's just a matter of chemistry. We simply enjoy being together. This week, I had a couple of days off of work to hang out with my good friend Kathy, who came in from Arizona. Kathy and I are best buds since I was on staff at Church of the Beatitudes in Phoenix. We spent an afternoon at the Barnes Foundation. This was my first visit. Wow. And we saw a performance of Shakespeare's The Two Gentlemen of Verona in Clark Park in West Philly. And we took in some fine fare at Cuba Libre and some other restaurants. Family of origin, family of choice. I'm reminded of Harper Lee's line from To Kill a Mockingbird, "You can choose your friends, but you sure can't choose your family." And along with that family of origin, which we do not choose, often comes our faith of origin. I suspect most of us grew up with some type of faith. Maybe our parents taught us to believe that religion was for people with soft heads. Or like mine, maybe your family had a very clear understanding of the capital O, one true way. To paraphrase Harper Lee, you can choose your faith as an adult, but you sure can't choose the faith into which you were raised. So today I'm curious about that path between your faith of origin and your faith of choice. I'm fascinated by that in-between time. How have you, or how are you, navigating the path between the faith in which you were raised, whether it be Catholic, atheist, Buddhist, or something else, and the faith you have chosen, or perhaps are choosing, something that's authentic for you now, that shapes your life and guides your decisions? Some years ago, a friend gave me a book titled The Way of Transition by William Bridges. I commend it to you. In it, Bridges argues that the words change and transition, though often used as synonyms, are actually two very different things. Change, Bridges writes, is a situational shift. Getting a new boss is a change, and so is receiving a promotion or losing your job. Moving to a different house is a change, and so is remodeling your house or losing it in a fire. I think Bridges would probably agree that leaving a faith community is a change, as is joining a new one, or perhaps visiting one for the very first time. Change is an event, a shift. Transition, on the other hand, Bridges writes, is the process of letting go of the way things used to be and then taking hold of some new way again. And in between the letting go and the taking hold again, there is this chaotic but potentially creative neutral zone when things aren't the old way, but aren't really a new way yet either. Change is a shift, an event, transition, a process that takes time. And so again, I'm curious about the faith, about the path between your faith of origin and your faith of choice today. I'm fascinated by how we find our way through that creative and, quite honestly, often very uncomfortable in-between place. Thinking back, what was your faith like when you were 20 years old? Do you still believe most of the things you believed at age 20? I can definitely think of a few beliefs that no longer ring true for me, or at best were incomplete. What was your faith like when you were 20? What was or what is your faith like at age 40 or 60? A couple of weeks back, my six brothers and I were in Colorado and celebrated my mom's 83rd birthday. Now, I believe that any mother of seven sons who is still standing upright at age 83 should get an expedited path to sainthood. Mom definitely talks, and more so now than ever, about how her beliefs have been shaped by her life experiences. Her seven sons have added a few things to her life. What is faith like at age 80 and beyond? Change, Bridges says, is an event, transition, a process. I bet many of us are somewhere in the process of transition right now. Are you in that letting go stage when faith or belief which had been meaningful, had been a source of grounding, no longer is? Or are you in that uncomfortable, potentially creative, in-between stage when things aren't the old way, but they aren't really a new way yet either? Or are you in the process now of taking hold of a new way of faith? I imagine some of us have come to Unitarian Universalism while in that in-between time. I certainly did. And I'm incredibly grateful for the welcome that I first found in Phoenix at Unitarian Universalist Congregation of Phoenix, and now here for the last year at USG. We're probably all familiar with people, or maybe in our own life, of having made a change but clearly not having done the more challenging and time-consuming work of transition. The relationship has ended, but a couple of years later, I'm still spending a lot of energy stewing about things done and said, or left undone and unsaid, without gaining a whole lot of insight into my role in the matter. The change has happened, the relationship is done, but has the transition? A friend decides to take a new job at Temple University and is often saying to his new coworkers, "Now, when I was at Rutgers, we did X, Y, and Z, which was so much better than here. without kind of really fully living into the reality that he's not at Rutgers anymore. He's here. They do things differently here. Or perhaps long ago you left a faith community that was no longer life-giving, but you still find within yourself a lot of energy for talking trash about that previous community and its perceived shortcomings. I might have done that once or twice. A change has taken place, but has the transition? We all make changes in our lives, but the challenge and possibility come in navigating the process of transition, that creative in-between place. And in that time, I believe we need a real sense of humility to acknowledge and name the things that we once believed that no longer ring true for us. And we need compassion for ourselves and for each other as we struggle through the transitions in our lives. My Mennonite heritage has much that is rich and good and true. For example, Mennonites have historically been engaged in disaster relief, serving others in times of need. In fact, volunteers from my small congregation in northeastern Ohio, still over 10 years after Hurricane Katrina, are traveling each year to New Orleans to rebuild houses that were destroyed. I think that small congregation has rebuilt, on average, 2 houses a year over the last decade. One little congregation in Ohio connecting with families in New Orleans to rebuild homes. I'm proud of that, in a humble sort of way. And in that same spirit, in my family, we once said, no one in our family goes to a nursing home. We take care of our own. Yet when my dad was diagnosed with Alzheimer's at age 62, I was 22, life in due time taught us otherwise. We needed help that we, in ways we never could have imagined, when we said with such confidence, we take care of our own. It's humbling to acknowledge that something we maybe once believed strongly, we take care of our own, is in fact not always true. We needed help in my family. And since life brought this lesson to our family, I think we have a lot more compassion for ourselves in the difficulties in our lives and for others when things simply don't turn out as we had hoped or planned or believed. Changes will come, and we need humility and compassion for ourselves and for others as we move through the transitions that follow. I recently came across Robert Jones's newly published book, The End of White Christian America. And in it, he explores the huge period of transition that we are living through in this country right now. And Jones argues that for most of the country's history, white Christian America, the cultural and political edifice built primarily by white Protestant Christians, set the tone for our national policy and shaped our American ideals. But in recent decades, new immigration patterns, changing birth rates, and religious disaffiliation have transformed, or are transforming, the United States. The year 1993, Jones writes, was the last year in which white Protestants constituted a majority of the population in the U.S. And today, in 2016, even when Catholics are included, white Christians make up less than half of the country. What I find so fascinating and helpful in Jones's new book is his urging for us to recognize and name the changes that have happened and that are happening, so that we then can be intentional about how we move together through this challenging, uncomfortable at times, but possibly creative time of transition. And this is where you and I, and this Unitarian Universalist faith community, have, I believe, an incredibly important role to play in the world. We have experienced that we can bring to bear in this time of incredible transition. We've learned about living through life transitions. Many of us have learned about living through faith transitions. I'm curious how many of you were born and grew up in the UU? Okay, maybe 10 right here today. So we know something about transitions, life transitions and faith transitions. And as we can all hear, we're living in a rather shrill time in our political discourse, in our public dialogue, a time when it's tempting to hunker down with our current ideas and beliefs as though we now have the right answers. And we may be tempted to look back with disdain at earlier times in our lives, at the communities of faith from which we came. But now, more than ever, we need compassion and humility in relating with those whose beliefs we may have set aside as no longer meaningful to us. Many of us could tell stories about our families of origin and our faith of origin. But I'm reminded again of that Fuller line from To Kill a Mockingbird. You can't choose your friends. Oh, you can choose your friends, but you sure can't choose your family. And Harper Lee continues, they're still kin to you no matter whether you acknowledge them or not. And it makes you look downright silly when you don't. Blessed be.